This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
It's good to be back in the basement. It's good to be home. Even though New Orleans was a great deal of fun, the outcome could have been better for us. But, you know, hey, you don't win them all.
Yeah.
You don't win them all.
Think about how happy
all
the,
you are, you
think about how happy all those people would have been on that plane flying yesterday.
Well, I mentioned to you on Monday's show, again, the biggest word in sports.
You told Jim Clements this, by the way.
I told the president of Clemson University the same thing.
He didn't hold back.
It was honest and true. If Clemson had won the game Monday night, it would have gone down as the greatest sports weekend in the history of the school, not only ever, but forever and ever.
Mm-hmm.
And as it turns out, you think about Robbie Robinson goes number one
right
in the draft, soccer draft. Clemson upsets North Carolina for the first time ever in Chapel Hill men's basketball.
Right.
They beat Duke last night, and stuck right in there in between was a unfortunate loss to LSU in the national championship game. Kind of an amazing run right now for the Tigers.
One of our favorites on ACC Central, and certainly on Packer and Durham through 99 shows, joins us, and that's Grace Rayner from The Athletic. Grace, good morning.
Good morning. Thank y'all for having me.
Absolutely. Couldn't think of anybody better to have on our 99th show.
99. That's awesome. Congratulations to y'all. You're getting close to 100. That's awesome.
I would say we're as close to 100 as we could possibly get, Grace.
Yeah.
That'd be my guess.
Yeah.
That'd be my tip to you today. That's going to be my tip to you.
Yeah. This is the last hour of show 99, Grace. So you're right. We are close to 100. Okay, I want to ask one question first, then we're going to dive into the Tigers. Packers started this morning with a long soliloquy of his travel from New Orleans yesterday, of which I got to witness some of it firsthand. My flight left late in the afternoon. I just chose to be an early arrival at the airport, and I was on time, American Airlines, everything was fine. How was your travels from New Orleans yesterday, Grace?
My travels were great. My flight left on time. In fact, my flight was so short that I thought I would be able to finish a story I needed to write for The Athletic, and I did not. It was that smooth and that fast.
And you went from New Orleans directly to Greenville? No problem?
I did. No problem.
Did you have to check your bag, or were you able to put it in the overhead like most American flyers?
I checked one, but I don't know. I'm a weird traveler. I always like to have a carry-on, too, just in case my checked bag gets lost. So
there you go. That's
I had my big stuff and my small one, yeah.
All right.
What airline was this, by the way?
Yeah, I need to hear your story. I flew
no,
United
no,
yesterday.
No. You really don't. I'm just kidding.
I got DVR. I'll go hear it.
Well, as a matter of fact, about an hour from now, if you still keep it here on ACC Network, you'll hear the whole story. What airline was this, Grace?
It was United.
Oh, of course it was. Yeah. I knew what airline it wasn't. United. Now, this is the beauty about living outside of Charlotte. You have things called options.
Yeah,
we don't have that here.
Yeah, okay. All right.
I'm glad you made it home safely.
Yeah, see?
I'm glad you made it home safely.
Oh, you just don't even know the half of it.
This is what happens when you grow up in the mean streets of Rutherfordton like Rayner does.
This is
what happens to you.
All right, let's get to football because I'm already getting upset listening to this.
All right. The dust is obviously settled. You had some interesting vantage points after the game Monday night. And I think, and I said this on the show yesterday, Grace, you learn as much when you lose as when you win in the Clemson program, because it's a program. It's not just a team. It is the particular 2019 team. So this didn't happen Monday night. How do you think Clemson handled it? And what do you think it means going forward for Dabo Swinney's club?
I thought they handled it really well. I mean, we all were curious to see what Trevor Lawrence is going to say, you know, how he was going to handle all of it. And to his credit, I thought he was extremely poised, very gracious. You know, I wasn't super surprised by the way Trevor handled it. I thought that he did really well with that whole scene. But it was a different kind of night. I mean, usually we go into the Clemson locker room or we talked to them in post-game interviews, and they've just been dancing for an hour, and they're all hyped up. And this time it was very quiet. You could kind of hear, like, the zippers of the duffel bags, and that was kind of the loudest sound in the locker room. There were a couple of people crying. But I think, like you said, this is a program. You know, this team had 80 freshmen and sophomores on it. I think they're built for the long haul here. I think you guys would probably agree that we'll be pretty surprised if they're not right back in this conversation again a year from now.
It's always interesting to see how a loss will fuel a football team. And we have seen this already with Clemson when they made their first national championship appearance against Alabama, which was a great game out in the desert. And, you know, to be honest with you, I thought they were the better team that night, even though they didn't win. Mm-hmm. But that game really fueled them to the next season in terms of the work, put it on the chip on shoulder and all that kind of stuff. And again, Dabo's been down this road before. He's been in four of the last five championship games. It'll be interesting to watch them work in the spring, won't it, Grace?
Oh, for sure. I mean, this is, and you know, they start spring practice pretty early usually, so right. They're going to start spring practice, I think, 6 weeks from tomorrow. So they'll have, you know, a little layoff, but we've seen what Trevor Lawrence can do when he gets mad, like in a game, just in one moment, you know. So for him to have an entire offseason to kind of let this stew, I'm with you. I think that they're going to learn a lot about themselves, and I think they'll come back extremely motivated to be right back in this conversation.
It's interesting how the calendar moves in a year's time, right? I mean, a year ago, he's the beau of the ball. He is a guy who we then watch get scrutinized, quite frankly, in the first 6 weeks of the season, then turns around and has an unbelievable finishing kick until he gets to Monday night. Grace, his maturity of handling this spotlight is certainly going to be tested in some different ways. I'll be interested to see just how available he is this offseason in many respects, won't you?
Yeah, I will. I mean, that was one of the things, too, that as the clock was winding down, Jeff Scott, Clemson's co-offensive coordinator, you know, before everything got kind of crazy, he actually went over to Trevor and said, hey, look, there are going to be a lot of eyes on you. There are going to be a lot of people watching you, not just in the next few minutes, but, you know, down the course of the whole off season. Mm-hmm. So, you know, be ready for that. Make sure you're ready to handle it, that kind of stuff. And, you know, they hugged on the sideline. But, yeah, Trevor, to his credit, he's been really, really good at handling that spotlight all year. Now it's going to be a little bit different because the outcome was different. But certainly he's going to be just as talked about, if not more talked about, as we head into the off season.
Grace, there's a couple juniors that need to figure out what they're going to do here in about the next 48 hours. How do you think all that will play out between now and the end of Friday?
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at – well, so we know Isaiah Simmons is already going, obviously. He had told Coach Sweeney at the beginning of the season this was something that he wanted to do. So we do have clarity on him. But I don't know. I think you look at Travis Etienne and T. Higgins. I think they both go. I mean – Tony Elliott was saying that he and Travis will sit down this week, and they'll have a conversation about shelf life and the importance of a first contract as a running back in the NFL. And then T. Higgins, I mean, you look at him, I think he's first rounder. So they certainly have some tough decisions to make. They'll talk to Coach Sweeney. Travis had kind of indicated that he'll use most of the time. So I think he'll come down maybe closer to the deadline. But you're right. This is a pretty fast turnaround that they've got to figure out pretty quickly.
Grace, it is interesting because the Higgins and the ETN decisions, what was the quote Mack used yesterday? Oh, I know he's gone, right? I mean, yeah, I don't think that – I think the real question becomes like an A.J. Terrell more than it becomes these guys, right? I mean, is
– Sure.
I mean, that's the one to me that if you're going to get somebody back, that might be the guy that comes back just because the corner market is what the corner market is, right?
Sure. I also wonder how much Monday night specifically might play into his decision. I mean, we haven't really seen him struggle all season in a way that we did Monday night. So obviously it's just one game, but I am curious kind of how that goes into a player's mindset when they're evaluating their stock. But yeah, if they could get AJ Terrell back, and then obviously Darian Kendrick is only going to be a junior next year, so he can't go. But if they can get both of those starting corners back, especially because they're losing both their starting safeties in Tanner Muse and Kayvon Wallace, you're probably feeling pretty good if you're Brent Venables.
Yeah, I'd say so, right? Now, we did mention this yesterday, and Grace Rayner of The Athletic joins us here on Packer and Durham. Clemson's strength this year defensively was the back end. Eric and Pack and I were talking about it. It goes from the back to the front in terms of the defense. This year, they're going to lose a lot of guys on the offensive side, yet the skill guys and the skill depth we've always regarded as being really good anyway. But how big a transition do you expect in the offensive line?
Man, I think that's your biggest question for sure. I mean, Jackson Carman was the only non-graduating starter, which is kind of crazy to think about because, you know, you're right. We're just so inclined to think about skill guys and, okay, what are T and Travis and all them going to do? But, yeah, I mean, Gage Cervenka is gone. Tremaine Ankrum is gone. Sean Pollard is gone. John Simpson is gone. So they're going to have to completely remake that offensive line with Jackson being the only piece that returns.
Well, I don't know if you know this, Grace, but Clemson's turned into a basketball school within a week. So, you know, we'll worry about that offensive line thing later on. Can you believe that? How crazy is that?
Oh, my gosh, man. I really wish that we all could have been there from the media. Like, the timing of it bums me out because we were obviously all traveling. But, man, I don't know if anyone's having a better 2020 than A, Joe Burrow, and B, Brad Brownell.
You're right. Probably in that order, yeah. But you're probably 100% right.
Yeah, you might be right. Okay, there's no doubt last night means a lot for Brad Brownell, but it also, three straight wins on Tobacco Road or over Tobacco Road, that doesn't happen every time either. So, you know, you got to build on that, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I'm excited to see kind of how this team takes that momentum and channels it and moves it forward. I mean, to do what they have done, I mean, this has to be, like you guys said, this has to be the greatest 2 days in the history of Clemson basketball, right?
Yeah, it's close, I would say, if it's not right there. All right, I have a very important question. Your colleague, Tory McElhaney, is going to join us at the bottom of the hour, and I know how you people at The Athletic are. So have you provided her a scouting report of being a debut guest on Packer and Durham?
You guys are going to love Tory. She is the best. Mm-hmm. In fact, Tori is my pack to my west, or my west to my pack. You'll love her. She's awesome. She's a little nervous, but she's going
to
do great.
So and I wouldn't say pack to west. Maybe a Thelma and Louise combination might be better.
Perfect. Yes, exactly.
Because when you think of Grace Rayner and Tory McElhaney, you think of people robbing banks and committing crime, don't
Pretty
you?
Pretty much exactly. So. Yeah, that's it. That's how we do it.
All right. Be well. Always great to talk to you. Thanks so much for the time, as always.
Thank y'all for having me. Be well to you guys, too.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
A lot of stuff looks good on paper, Wes, but then you got to play the game.
Yeah. We're going to tackle an issue at the bottom of the hour, and it won't be our first time going through this, by the way. One of the things that is happening across college athletics, in fact, the Atlantic Coast Conference last spring started diving into mental health among student athletes. And the ACC, at the same time as they were staging the ACC Baseball Championship at the Durham Bulls Athletic Park, also in the Triangle, the early part of that week, had a two-day seminar featuring leaders and moderators around the country on mental health among collegiate athletes.
And this subject has become a big-time topic, and you know what? Rightfully so.
Yep.
Long overdue, quite frankly.
Yeah, and obviously with the tragedy involving Bryce Gowdy, who was the football signee at Georgia Tech from Deerfield Beach, Florida, back over the holidays, it's kind of come to light again. And Tory does an unbelievable job outlining what Georgia Tech is doing and has been doing to that effect. And we're going to talk more with people around the ACC about mental health and collegiate athletics. And you're right. It's something that I don't think a lot of people gave a lot of thought to.
Nope.
And now it's going to surface. And it's one of those things that, if we do anything else on here, we have some laughs, we have some fun, we talk to coaches and student athletes and people who follow the league. We're also going to have some issues.
Yeah, this is a real subject and one that you should pay attention to. And it's even above just student athletes, just from a society standpoint that, mental health, I think for a long, long time, it's just been whatever, put some dirt on you, be good to go.
Yeah.
No, it goes much deeper than that, obviously.
Yeah, so we're going to talk with Tory McElhaney of The Athletic coming up bottom of the hour. Let's get to a quick night of ACC basketball. Only three games, but, man, did they all have something in them.
Everything that happened last night, there was a storyline to be told, and one that we probably haven't given enough attention to. It was the job that Coach Young's doing in Blacksburg, going on the road again and knocking off Wake Forest.
I got to tell you, Mike Young has quietly gone about his business here.
No question.
You get some of these wins he's gotten, and all of a sudden, you got to feel pretty good if you're the Hokies. Not just where you are in terms of the first year and that kind of thing. you got to feel pretty good about maybe what your postseason looks like if you can stick a few more together.
And it all started with their very first game this year on the road at Clemson, which I don't think a lot of folks thought they'd win, and they did. And they just keep on rocking and rolling. Last night was a really good win. This is one of these kind of games that you steal, you put in your back pocket, and you move on.
Yeah.
It's a momentum game.
Well, because Wake Forest has improved, and we've talked about it.
And playing with confidence.
Yep. And so to go to Winston-Salem last night, get another road win. I mean, Landers Nolly, of course.
Radford was big last night.
Tyrese Radford. And I think we're getting ready to see. Did we see the punch? Did we see the dunk?
Oh, that dunk is one of the best of the year.
Yeah. I tell you what, the Hokies, Radford had 21 last night and 13 rebounds, by the way, and he is
boom.
Yeah, there you go.
There it is.
Yeah. He, by the way, is a 6'4 guy, 6'3 guy. He led Louisiana in rebounding, by the way. The state of Louisiana in rebounding. And he has come to Blacksburg and has become a real big piece of what Mike Young's first team is. In part, 6'1", by the way, is his height. But he's become a big piece for a team that is kind of undersized when you think about it.
I would go as far to say that here on January the 15th, and I know we still have a couple months of the season in front of us, the best time of the year from a basketball perspective, but he is easily the ACC Coach of the Year. Easily.
Mike Young?
Right now. Yeah. Now, again, it's early. Doesn't mean squat from that perspective. But I think all of our expectations of Virginia Tech, with Buzz being gone, everybody left for the most part. Young gets this incredible opportunity to kind of go back home. And what you figured he was going to inherit in Blacksburg, what you thought the season was going to look like, I think all, and I'm not wanting to speak for everybody, but I think we all thought they'd be 14 or 15.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
yeah.
And I'm being kind. That this is, hey, this, it's great that he's in the league and get this opportunity, but this first year is going to be difficult. Man, forget it.
Yeah.
They have been an incredible story.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. And it's going to get interesting here for Virginia Tech. Syracuse, by the way, at the Castle on Saturday, Pack.
They all become big weeks, don't they? I mean, you know, it's kind of the microcosm of the big picture that, hey, can we get through a week 2-0? If you can go 2-0 right now in the ACC, you're leapfrogging people.
Yeah.
Right? We keep talking about the glob from 4-15. I mean, you put together a couple, hey, you win 3 out of 4, you go back-to-back 2-0s. Brother, you are going to the front of the class.
Yeah. Going to be interesting. Also, we mentioned, Grace Rayner touched on it as well, Clemson a huge win at home last night to beat Duke. They have now won 3 in a row, beating NC State. A week off, get Carolina and Chapel Hill, first time ever winning there, of course. And then the Tigers doubled down again by getting the Blue Devils last night. Amir Sims was sensational.
He was great. And Clemson beats both North Carolina and Duke in back-to-back games for the first time in 30 years. 30 years, 1990, the last time that took place. And they look good doing it.
I mean,
like I said, if you watched this game last night, you know, if you didn't know anything, if you just got off, a delayed American Airlines plane and you didn't know what was going on with the ACC, to say, well, that Clemson team, man, they're ranked 3rd in the country. I mean, they looked really, really good. Backdoor cuts have been working like crazy. Now, the only thing that wasn't good about this game last night was both teams from the free throw line were very mediocre, shooting 50%, but they both shot lights out from the field. Clemson shoots 56% from the field. 56% against a Duke team that's already had 3 wins in ACC play by more than 30 points. And there were people whispering about, can Duke run the table? Well, you know, as soon as you bring that topic up, loss. That's how it works. What are you looking at me for?
Drew Brooks says, I can throw you under the bus because I had that in the note yesterday.
There was conversations amongst media people.
How about a shot of Drew by himself again, flying the ship today?
There he is. Yeah.
There he is. Look, everybody's gone.
That looked like the American Airlines guys looking for the pilots. You got anybody fly this thing?
That bag right there next to you, sir, is way too big.
Way too big.
You can't carry that.
Sorry,
you
can't put that on the plane. But seriously, there were a lot of people who were basketball people. We're talking about Duke is the best team in the country, going to run the table or killing people.
Right.
And, you know, will they lose a game in the league? Well, the first time they get a chance to prove everybody right, they get beat at Clemson.
Yeah. The other ball game, the most fascinating and by the way, bang-bang of the night, is another overtime game in the ACC. We had two in about the first month or so of conference play. We've now had three in 4 days. This we had two on Saturday and one last night.
An amazing ending to this thing.
Tied at 60. It was 70-68. And a fifth foul gets called on Terrell Brown on a tip-in where he and Malik Williams are going back to the basket in a battle. Pittsburgh ends up winning. This is a tough play at the rim. Jordan wore a big night, 14.6 rebounds. Louisville hit 12 threes. Dwayne Sutton, Ryan McMahon, all contributing. Cards, another key road win. I mean, Pittsburgh is playing well. Some nights, like Chapel Hill, they get a chance to, you know, validate it. Other nights, like Miami, where they battle back, got it to a two-point game, couldn't get it to the house. They fall. Then last night, it's a bang-bang overtime play. By the way, Louisville, 12 of 25 from three, 23 of 60. By the way, both teams under 40% from the floor. So where they shot it well in the Clemson-Duke game, right? Both teams shot it well from the floor. Didn't shoot it well from the free throw line. Here, Louisville shoots almost 50% from three-pack.
Pittsburgh fans will not be happy if they, when number one, went to the game, and number two, watched the game, how that thing ended. That one hurts.
No question.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
We'll get Tori on here in a moment. And I'm interested in what she has to say, Wes, because as we discussed kind of setting up this segment, mental health issues in this country, not just student-athletes, which is obviously a concern with the pressures that that 18, 19, and 20-year-olds go through while they're on campus, the issues of society and everything else that's thrown on you, much less if you're a student-athlete and the pressures to perform. But, you know, this just goes long, long and far beyond what we're talking about with just colleges. This is people, everyday life. All of a sudden, people are spending more time on mental health to make sure that you got your balances and everything's checked off and you're good to go.
Well, I think it also said something that the ACC last May, when they conducted the two-day out in the Research Triangle Park area, I thought it was a very interesting and precedent-setting step. There's certainly some things the NCAA wants to continue to do with some of their studies as well. But as Tori McElhaney joins us from The Athletic, Georgia Tech, Tori, and first of all, thank you so much for the time. Appreciate you doing this.
Absolutely.
The idea that Georgia Tech is kind of out in front on this and then the Bryce Gowdy things happens, it seems to be just kind of eerie in many respects, I think.
Yeah, I think so. And that, cause that was something that when I sat down to do this story, that was something that these professionals that I talked to were very adamant about. They're like, we haven't been reactionary to any of this. We've been proactive. We have counseling available to these student athletes, but it does kind of it makes it really upsetting because you almost kind of think like, you just wish he would have gotten to Atlanta. And of course you don't know what would happen when he does, but it's heartbreaking in a sense to know that there was hope and there was opportunities and resources available to him and to all the student athletes at Georgia Tech.
Seems like there's an increased focus, and thank goodness for it. And I'm sure you've picked up on that not only at Georgia Tech, but also around the country.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think because they started all this in 2013 with Dr. Kinza Gunter when she first came on there as a consultant. And she said, you know, we started doing everything because there were NCAA guidelines and things that were already in place, but we wanted to really grow it. And she said that by the time that she left to start her own practice in 2018, that it was a really robust program, what they were offering in terms of mental health care at Georgia Tech.
Dr. Angelo Galante is the longtime chief medical officer at Georgia Tech. And obviously from that side as a general physician, he was out in front. But there's only so much that these quote unquote trainers and doctors can do, Tori. Is this going to be in your mind different with every school as we move forward? Or is this going to be something that, that maybe conferences can take the lead on? As I mentioned earlier, the ACC did the seminar last May.
Right. Yeah. And that was actually, you know, back in May, I actually wrote a story regarding what the ACC was doing. And I actually talked to Dr. Kinza Gunter back then before consulting with her again for this story that I just wrote. And I think it is discretionary based on the universities. Mm-hmm. But it is something that I think you could have, kind of like what you said with the NCAA, you could have guidelines and things that every program, every athletic department has to have. Because I think right now it is kind of discretionary based on the program and what they are willing to put forth into making mental health care part of just health care that they provide their student athletes.
Tori, what surprised you the most before you got into this story versus, you know, what you knew about mm-hmm. it now that you've delved into this thing and got into it deep and heavy? What surprised you the most about this?
I think for me, it was, you know, when I sat down to talk to these three professionals, it was, I told them right off the bat, I was like, I really want this to be a roundtable discussion. I was like, I hope that you feel comfortable being open and honest about mental health care, because it is something that is hard to talk about, especially in light of everything that has happened around Georgia Tech athletics in the past year. I was really happy because they really went in. They didn't just make this about sports psychology or sports mental health or mental health for student athletes. It was really, we talked about a lot of societal issues that we have in terms of what we think about in terms of mental health care. So access, availability, and maybe sometimes a lack of availability, financial obligations to receive the care that someone may need or the medication somebody may need. These are societal issues. These are things in our society that we need to get better at, to be proactive in. So that, I think, was what surprised me, that this is something that goes way deeper than sports, way deeper than what a student athlete is going through. These are people who just happen to be athletes. So it's something that we as people are struggling with. We as people are trying to figure out the answers to, because it is hard to talk about, and it is hard to try and find just some type of solace in all of this.
Tori, the Bryce Gowdy situation is tragic on a lot of fronts. One, you know, the mental side of where this young man was. The second part of this is the one that I think this is where we're going to walk that difficult line a little bit. I mean, there was obviously a welfare situation involved there. We don't know the full details of it. I'm not sure that Jeff Collins and his group may have known it was a tough situation. Did they know how tough? There's also the privacy laws that we have as it relates to medical conditions of student athletes or, you know, students at universities and colleges around the country in general. How fine a line are we going to have to walk to do the education, to do the investigation or diagnosis, if you will, of these student athletes because of all the things that are already in place?
You're absolutely right. It does make it a very hard line to even find. Because when you're talking about mental health looks different for every single person. And I think some people it just really does. There's no cookie cutter way to treat it. There's no cookie cutter way to talk about it. It is very individualized for the person. So I think that in itself makes it difficult. But then also you think about these Georgia Tech coaches. They were in the situation with Bryce Gowdy. They only have the opportunity. They only can speak to him and communicate with him every so often. It's not a situation where they can just go down there and be like, hey man, what's up? Like whenever they want to. They can't do that because of the NCAA's rules and regulations regarding what they can do in recruiting and how often they can see these kids. So I think in terms of that, like Georgia Tech's hands were tied in this situation. They knew financially kind of what his family has gone through. But as you all know, when we're covering sports, this isn't completely out of the ordinary to have financial means and matters of a family situation not look that great. And so that is one piece of it. But the other piece of it is just that how much can actually be done if it's not being done right there in the community. And that's where we get back to the insurance and the being able to pay for things and being able to recognize all these different things that we need as a society to understand that goes along with mental health care.
I would assume that there's other coaches at Georgia Tech kind of following Jeff Collins' lead on this. Can you explain that a little bit and go a little deeper too?
Yeah, I mean, I think that what Georgia Tech started back in 2013 in terms of their mental health care was something that they started in light of Dr. Kinza Gunter, who I spoke to, her coming in and working with one specific team. And then it kind of spread to, she was working with 17 to 18% of the student athlete population at Georgia Tech. So it grew, and in light, the program grew with it. And they also talked about how when Todd Stansbury got there, that he really made it a point that he really wanted to have mental health care be at the forefront of what he was doing as an athletic director. And that's when they hired a full-time in-house psychologist, who I also spoke with for the story. And so that at Georgia Tech, I think, is one thing, but it's going to be, what are other schools doing? And I know y'all talked to Grace, and I'm sure that Clemson has a great mental health care program set up for their student athletes. It's all, I think, discretionary on the program. But when you have coaches and you have student athletes and you have administrators that are willing to put mental health care into the health care that they provide student athletes, I think that is where you're going to see a change. And I think that is so important to see in terms of kind of what is done in this.
You know, it's so interesting, this topic, and Mark mentioned this. This is, you know, something that's coming to light in collegiate athletics now. It's something society-wise that we've been working through, you know, what, years now? But it's really getting more to the surface in society. And as that happens, I think that helps college, right?
Well, it seems to me, and Tori can go through, probably do this a lot better than we can, it seems to me that college athletics has been a little bit behind the pace in society. And right, we're kind of doing a little catch-up on this front. But I think it's important, though, that it's at least been acknowledged that, hey, you know what, this is something that you really do need to get a handle on. And it's become, I think, even more accepted in society that, you know what, mental health is not one of those things that you kind of cower behind the closed door and you say, I don't want to tell anybody about it. You need to be upfront with all this stuff.
Hey, Tori, I want to wrap on this concept. How fast a track do you think we're on? And I'm going to use the ACC, right? I know we know Georgia Tech is obviously at the forefront. You've written about that. The league does the seminar last spring. I'm guessing there'll be another one without confirming yet. I'm going to assume that it was so successful, as I understood from hearing about it, that it was a very successful project that they had over the 2 days. Now, all of a sudden, do you think this is a faster track in the ACC, maybe by the individual institutions than we anticipate? Is this something that'll get ramped up pretty quick?
I think so, but I think in terms of wrapping up what mental health care is, you know, talking to these professionals, they're like, this isn't easy. There are things about mental health that we don't know the answer to. So to kind of say that it's going to be all wrapped up in a neat night bow and that the ACC or the NCAA is able to provide everything that they can, I think that's a little harder said than done because of the way that mental health doesn't look the same for every single person and how it changes an individual. So I think that everybody is on the right track, but I don't know how long that track is, how long it's going to take to provide everything that an individual needs in terms of counseling, in terms of medication, if that is needed, in terms of referrals. All of these things are on that track, but we don't know where that track is going. We don't know how long it's going to take to get to the end of that track. So I think that, yes, there is a track. Yes, we're on the track. But what's the end goal? How do we know what the end goal is in terms of mental health care being a part of healthcare?
Good stuff.
Yeah, I don't think there's a finish line on this one. Yeah. I think this is just one of those ongoing things. But the fact that it's at least being acknowledged, I think, is a wonderful thing for student athletes. And again, it's more than just the NCAA in sports here. Right. I mean, this is something that folks deal with. And, you know, you can at least, like I said, be open-minded to have conversations if you have some issues that need to be addressed.
Yeah.
No longer feel that you should just keep this thing under wraps.
Hey, Tori, thanks for the time. Appreciate your good work on the story. It was awesome to see, and we look forward to having you back. And keep up the great work.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you, Tori.
Tori McElhaney of The Athletic covers Georgia Tech and some things in Atlanta. Another really revealing piece of what we're finding now in the ACC and elsewhere.
Well, I was going to say, and elsewhere is the most important thing here, too, because, I mean, obviously the Atlantic Coast Conference has acknowledged it and has earmarked that, hey, this needs to be something that needs to be discussed and looked into. But I think around the country, Wes, everybody has kind of taken everybody else's lead on this to say, hey, this needs to be addressed.
Yeah.
And I think if you're a parent and you've got a college student, I mean, you know, that transition from, you know, home, high school, and now you're independent, on the road, peer pressure, social issues, social media. I mean, you know, the pressure of grades. And again, this is up and above being a student athlete. I think anybody who's a parent who's had kids and has gone through this understands that, hey, you want to make sure your kids are doing okay. And I think the fact that mental health's now been at least acknowledged and addressed, it should be a conversation, is a good thing for all parties involved.
All right. Thanks to Tori. Appreciate her joining us.
Yep. Excellent.
A plus. Pass the test for you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. She's more than welcome to come back. She and Grace together. Tandem.
Thelma and Louise.
Thelma and Louise.
Is that what you're going to go with? Yeah. Great. Yeah.
Packer and Durham.
There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
A lot of stuff happened while we were gone. One thing happened last night that's got ACC ties to it, that especially here in Charlotte, that really surprised me. And I can honestly tell you, I don't know the guy personally. I've met him a couple times. But Luke Kuechly, who's a former Boston College great, incredible NFL career.
Yep, grew up in Cincinnati.
Right, announced last night that he is going to retire from the National Football League at the age of 28 and said basically, no, I just know it's the right thing to do.
Yep.
But, man, what a great player at Boston College, a great player in the National Football League. We've got some close personal friends that are very close with him.
Yep.
That just speak the high heavens of what a quality dude this is. And wish him the very best. And I hope at some point in time when he gets comfortable and chills out and, you know, everything kind of settles down a little bit that we can have him on. But because he has just been unbelievable, not only in the area here in Charlotte as a Carolina Panther, but as I mentioned, a former BC player and just quality dude there, man.
Yeah, very emotional farewell to football on the Panthers website and their Twitter feed last night. All I can tell you is the one exchange, and I was with other folks when I was around him, he is first class, top drawer guy.
Yep.
I mean, really just an impressive, impressive guy. And I am, I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of the way he played. I'm a big fan of the way he handles himself.
Yep.
I know he has he keeps his offseason home here in Charlotte, likes to fly fish. I hope he stays in the community. I know how important he's been to the community in his 8 years playing for the Panthers and doing things for charitable organizations and things like that.
I have no idea if he wants to get into broadcasting, but he'd be a great addition on the ACC Network.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he'd be fantastic. He'd be fantastic just talking the game and
things
like that. He's a very quiet guy by nature.
He's very quiet. But, the few times I've been around him, he is so unassuming that you'd have no idea, hey, that guy over there in the corner, it's an all-pro linebacker right there. I mean, he's really
– defensive MVP, rookie of the year.
Low-key.
And, yeah, and I know the Pro Football Hall of Fame, of which, by the way, I've got another note that came out late last night as well about that with ACC ties. Pro Football Hall of Fame is going to change the dynamic, the playing careers, those type things. For every Tom Brady, there's going to be a Calvin Johnson or a Luke Kuechly who are sub-10 years in the league. And I'll tell you, some of these sub-10-year guys, their numbers prorated are going to be as strong as guys who played 14, 15 years. And I'm telling you, Luke Kuechly and Calvin Johnson, in my mind, are Hall of Famers. Yeah, I'm biased. But to me, I think that's the new wave of Hall of Famer in pro football.
And here's the other thing, too, Wes, and maybe more importantly, especially after the conversation we just had, talking about mental health and everything else. And again, I'm not a doctor, as you well know, but Luke Kuechly with the concussion protocol and what he's been through, when you watch the video of him making the announcement last night, again, I don't have any insight on this whatsoever. You do what you have to do, and you know, hopefully you got a handle on the big picture. But the fact that a guy as talented and as good at what he did could look in the mirror at the age of 28 and say, you know what, the passion it takes to be great in that game, the love affair that folks have with that sport, to walk away at the age of 28, that has got to be hard to do. Try to put yourself, if you've ever come across something you absolutely love to do, whether it be work, a hobby, whatever the case may be, and you say, you know what, I'm giving it up.
Yep.
That is, I mean, I tip my hat to him because that had to be a difficult, difficult decision.
By the way, this morning it was confirmed, rumored last night, that Pittsburgh will get its ninth. The University of Pittsburgh is getting ready to get its ninth former football player into the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Strong.
Jimbo Covert, who was a bad man.
Yes, he was.
will become a member of the 20-member centennial class of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It was confirmed this morning that Covert, who was an unbelievable offensive lineman at the University of Pittsburgh, will join a list of luminaries who have played for the Panthers that will go to the Pro Football Hall of
Pittsburgh
Fame.
Might have the most underrated list of star players. Because when you start thinking about, all right, bring to the table the best you got. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's immediate schools you'd go to. Pitt's one of those that flies underneath the radar, and then you start going through the names, you go, wow.
And I'll tell you this, if he's the ninth guy to go in, whenever Larry Fitzgerald decides to retire, you can start that clock.
That's exactly right. Count on it.
He will be first ballot. Well, here we are now, kids. We're like right here on the precipice of show 100. Tomorrow we have all we've been told.
I'm dressing up for 100.
Seriously?
Yeah.
We're going to wear shorts and a t-shirt?
I told you I'm going to wear a suit.
No, you're not.
Suit and tie tomorrow for me.
No, you're not going to wear a suit and tie. Show 100 tomorrow. All we've been told, favorite moments and best guess. And we do have something that's been forwarded to us from the break room at ESPN Radio that is for this basement.
For us.
For us, yes. And Josh Macri, we hope, makes it back for show 100.
Well, if it's on American, I don't know about that.
United, for Mark Packer, Drew Brooks, Jen, everybody in Bristol, great job. See you tomorrow for the centennial edition.
Suit and tie tomorrow, boys.
No way.
Dressing up.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.